apology secretary?
Yes, Chairperson, there's only one apology received from Honourable Sarah Paulson, who undergone an operation, so she will be with us. Thank you.
Honourable members, can I propose that we send I'll get our wishes to Honourable Member Paulson, and secondly, I want to apologise for the late start of the meeting. It's because there was a double booking and we had to find another venue, and this also made the other had an impact on the other logistical arrangements. We have two agenda points. One is the briefing by the department on the finalization of the National Policy on Financial Awards and the NPOs. Briefing by the children's sector on the National Policy on Financial Awards and NPOs policy guidelines. Something is not right. Four NPLs, financial awards, four NPLs. Yeah, and policy guidelines. Adoption of outstanding minutes. That's the two items. Any additions to the agenda? Or can we get a proposal for the acceptance of the agenda? Honourable members? Honourable Member Masilo? Thank you very much, Honourable Member, for that reminder. That will be done. With those 3 points, we're fine? Thank you. Can I just get an indication from the Children's Institute who's going to do the... Is it the Children's Institute? Or,
yes.
Yeah. Who's going to do the presentation?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Myself, Patrick Solomons from Olosongololo, and my colleague here, Vivian Lalu from RAPCAN, will be doing the presentation on behalf of the Children's Institute. Patrick Solomons. That's correct.
I remember Olosongololo from my days as at UWC. Yeah. Without wasting any more time, over to you, Mr. Solomons, and your colleague.
Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning to the members of the committee and Department of Social Development and other guests here at this meeting this morning. As I mentioned, my name is Patrick Solomons, and I'm from Olosongololo, and my colleague here, Vivian Lalu from RAPCAN, will be doing this presentation from that was prepared by the Children's Institute. And this presentation that we will be doing today is also endorsed by a number of non-profit organizations. They include the Center for Early Childhood Development, Childline South Africa, the Community Law Center, Homestead Projects for Street Children, Kids Haven, Olosongololo, the National Early Childhood Development Alliance, resources aimed at preventing children and child abuse and neglect, that's RAPCAN, the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference, the Parliamentary Liaison Office, UMTATA, Child Abuse Resource Centre, the Western Cape Street Children's Forum, Onspreek, Place of Hope, Scalabrini Centre, Badisa, Disabled Children Action Group, Annex, the Western Cape Foundation for Community Work, Ekpeng Empelweni, Early Childhood Resource Unit, the Children's Resource Center, Kululeka Grief Support, South Department Center for Children and Women, Access, Think Twice, the Cape Town Refugee Center, Patch, and Sangoko Western Cape. Collectively, these organizations present a diverse group of non-profit organizations that provides direct and indirect support and services to children, families, and communities from poor and urban, rural and from poor, rural, and urban communities within the Western Cape and elsewhere in South Africa. These services both include prevention services such as awareness, education programs, support services, and facilities for children, families, and communities. Early intervention services such as support, care, development services for children, families, and the communities that they find themselves in. They also provide statutory services, providing direct support and assistance to children that's in need of care and protection. We also provide research, monitoring, and evaluation services such as data collection, analysis of that data, and also distribution of that data. A large part of our services have been contracted by the Department of Social Development and other government departments to fulfill government's responsibility and obligations to provide social services as prescribed, mainly by the Constitution of South Africa, as well as the Children's Act of 2005 as amended, and related legislation concerning children. Many of our services at present are being threatened as the children's sector NPOs are experiencing severe funding crisis. Thus, the need for dialogue and development of a national policy that reflects government's responsibility, obligations, and commitment for full funding of services contracted by NGOs is crucial. We therefore welcome this opportunity to make this submission in partnership with the Children's Institute. My colleague from RAPCAN will read out the submission.
Good morning, everyone. I wanted to briefly take you through the main issues as it's laid out in the document in front of you. I think firstly we would like to raise our concerns regarding what we consider a non-consultative process in drawing up this policy. If you see, the document is dated as March 2011, but only became publicly available in June. Also, senior officials from the Department of Social Development made a statement that this document would become available for a consultative process, but then later acknowledged that, in fact, it would not be a consultation, but rather a briefing of a document that has already been finalized. In addition, the same official said that they would take into account submissions made by the National Welfare Forum. However, we don't see that in that the submission was considered in the final document that we saw. In addition, we'd like to say that we don't consider written inputs as the only means that would constitute a consultative process. We don't consider that is appropriate enough to be labeled as consultation. In addition to, and the reason why we feel quite strongly about this point is because the document states that this is a partnership between government and NPOs, and for that reason the consultative process is critically important. And you'll see in the language of the policy where it states that that NPOs will be responding to a call for proposal, rather than saying that NPOs need to submit their plan so that it can be part of government's budgeting process. And we believe that would be a more appropriate way of beginning to address the critical needs of people in South Africa. It just seems as if DSD is responding to NPOs as if they are donors rather than a partnership. The second point of consideration would be the actual name of this policy document. We would like to recommend that the name of the policy be changed to Funding of Social Service Providers rather than Financial Awards for Service Providers. We feel that the word awards implies that the funding is a gift from government, whereas we believe that the funding should be viewed as payment for services rendered. The next point we wanted to raise with you is the issue of the amount of NPOs that would require funding from DSD. So the document states that there are more than 100,000 organizations in South Africa, NPOs, of which 72,000 are registered NPOs. But when you break those numbers down further, you will see that 23,500 of those 100,000 organizations work in the area of social services, broadly speaking. And if you break that 23,500 down even further, you will see that many of them probably do not deliver the types of services listed in the policy document that DSD will fund. But we do acknowledge, though, that the figures are daunting, that those are huge figures of the amount of organizations that DSD would need to fund. And so we have made a proposal or a suggestion that funding should be prioritized along two lines. And the first line of prioritization, we believe, for government should be the state's constitutional and legislated obligations. If you look at the Bill of Rights, that mentioned the rights of every child to social services and protection from abuse and neglect. And also that the Children's Act makes mention that provincial MECs must provide for a range of services. It doesn't say may provide. And so we feel that the services that falls under must provide section should be prioritized. So government should ensure that NPOs that deliver these must-provide services should be fully funded to do so. The second suggestion, the second line of prioritization for us would be the notion in the Constitution that children deserve or should have a stronger access than other members of the population. So we have called this the first call for children, and that should also guide the Department of Social Development in terms of how to prioritize funding. Then from that point forward, we would expect some kind of progressive realization that each year expands the pot of money available for funding of NPOs delivering legislated services, rather than expecting, as this document, as the policy states, that a transformed organization is one that has become less dependent on government funding. In other words, these NPOs are delivering legislated, mandated services on behalf of the state, and they should be fully funded. And then in addition to this question of what services should be prioritized, there's also the issue of how much should be provided. This document seems to accept that NPOs funding should occur through subsidization. We argue that at least for services where it must provide its services, that the government should be covering the full cost, just as it does when procuring roads and buildings. A further consideration on this issue concerns the amount of funding available. The policy suggests, and the argument is regularly heard, that the provincial departments of social development, that there is just simply not enough money available. Yet on closer examinations, we have seen many, many provinces underspend on the allocations for child care and support. The next issue we'd like to discuss with you is the issue of transformation and equity as it's raised in the policy document. The document refers repeatedly to the need for equitable redistribution to the historically disadvantaged and mentions the word transformation. Although we share the department's concern about the ongoing bias in services towards the more urban and historically better resourced areas, we feel that the document is conflating two very different issues. Firstly, equitable redistribution towards vulnerable groups and the redistribution for us two clearly separate issues. The first issue we feel concerns the delivery to those who are most in need. And this, we would argue, is the issue about which we should be the most concerned. The second issue concerns around contacts and funds that should go to organizations that are managed by previously disenfranchised. Our concern is that in conflating the two aspects, the document seems to refer implicitly mostly to the latter, whereas the former, delivery to the most vulnerable, needs to receive the most emphasis in a policy concerned with government achieving its goals in respect of social services. The policy document does acknowledge that emerging NPOs are weak in a range of respects. But we are assuming that the department is not proposing that requirements and standards be lowered to allow these organizations to receive funding. We see that the policy document does propose that that more established NPOs act as a mentor to the emerging NPOs. And this approach has been successful, but we would recommend that established NPOs are fully funded for this mentoring role that they will play to emerging NPOs. I think a key issue that we would like to raise around equity, and this is something that was raised in the court case out of in the Free State High Court, is where we see that government are running their own programs, that they are funded at a much higher rate than what the state would pay NPOs for doing the exact same thing. And a very clear example here would be child and youth care centers, where government-owned provisions cost more than twice as much per child as the subsidy that they would provide to NPOs who run similar centers. The NPOs in the Free State court case highlighted that the differential in funding would likely result in unfair differences in the quality of services delivered to different beneficiaries. It also results in very different salary levels for those who deliver services in government and those who deliver the very same services in NPOs. So that brings us to the issue of national uniformity. The policy document states that we must move towards developing a uniform funding model, but we are currently very far from that situation. And in the absence of a uniform national policy, provinces have developed their own policies and practices. And this is where we see shortcomings in these policies in the case of the Free State High Court case, what happens in those cases where these policies are not sufficient. The judgment in this particular court case was in favor of the organizations who filed. And the subsequent revised policy submitted by the Department of Social Development in the Free State was also rejected by the court. We have been informed that the department in the Free State now plans to appeal that judgment. We, however, fully support the development of a national policy that can ensure uniformity for both service providers and beneficiaries. The second last point we'd like to raise is the issue around the incompleteness of the policy, what we believe is the incompleteness of the policy. The National Welfare Forum website reports that the new policy was approved on the 31st of March 2011 for implementation in April. It's however unclear to us how this document can be implemented, as it consists primarily of broad principles that has not yet been made available for public comment. The document also refers to at least one other document that would be necessary before implementation could occur, namely the NPO funding guidelines. Further, it refers to a range of documents that, to our knowledge, has not yet been developed. Which takes me to our last point around the unfinished and the unedited nature of this policy document. We are concerned that about the unfinished nature of the document, because this document is titled as a final draft. The long glossary at the end of this document begins to illustrate what we're trying to say. In the glossary, for example, there is a note next to the entry for gross domestic product asking whether this term is actually used in the document, And we have found many other examples where words in the glossary does not reflect in the main document at all. The glossary also uses the term welfare organization and talks about welfare services, which suggests that the glossary may have been cut and pasted from an earlier, perhaps even apartheid-era document, as far as we can tell. I'd like to hand back to Patrick.
Thank you. Chairperson, what we also note is that there's a number of concerns that we have, but particularly we feel that the more general concerns must be addressed before we can move forward. And I think Vivian did highlight those particular general concerns that we do have concerning the new policy as proposed by the Department of Social Development. We also, for example, feel that there's a need for us to acknowledge that what is happening with, in relation to the present policy and the proposed new policy is that the children's sector NGOs are actually subsidizing government for services because governments are fully funding these NGOs for those very same services that the government is providing itself. So therefore we feel that this situation we cannot allow. Instead, it should be the other way around. Government should be funding, should be subsidizing NPOs for providing services to governments instead of NPOs being used to subsidize government services. Another point I think is also very, very crucial for this committee to note and to realize is that we've experienced a depletion of funds within the NPO sector. And this has been brought about by a number of situations, the withdrawal of international funding, the impact of the global recession, and also the national economic crisis that we find ourselves in, the stress that that brings to NPOs. And of course, also increased price hikes. We've seen that the cost of living is increasing daily. And we've also seen that by the increased needs that children and families are having. We've also seen that there's been a decrease in funding from government towards NPOs. And there's been an increase in the need of services. We haven't seen the same level of increase in the level of funding that we've experienced from government. The present funding is having a severe impact on our ability to provide crucial services towards children and to families, right? It prevents us from providing quality services, to maintain skilled and qualified staff, and to remunerate staff properly. What we have experienced is that a lot of staff is moving into government sector. So we lose it because the remuneration is so much better than what the NPOs can offer. We've also seen that it hampers our ability to train and to develop new staff. The lack of funding is preventing us from continuously develop and to train our new staff. And also it prevents us from expanding our services to children and communities that's in need, particularly those in the rural, poor and urban poor areas, right? We also find that it hampers our monitoring and evaluation of our services so that we can improve and also measure the impact of these services. And of course also lastly, it hampers our ability to sustain these vital services for children. And I think it's very important that this committee look at this new policy in that kind of context, because the funding crisis has not just happened this year. It's been coming for the last 5 years in the making already, right? So therefore, the new policy must reflect a clear commitment from government and to ensure adequate funding for social services for children within a clear transformation and developmental framework and agenda. So it will be crucial to address these challenges experienced by the children's sector NPOs and NPOs in general. And therefore, we also call on this committee to consider the facilitation of a national inquiry or hearing into the present funding crisis being experienced, to establish what government's response is to address the funding crisis experienced by NPOs, and particularly the children's sector, and possibly to determine the need for an emergency funding for struggling NPOs and children sector and NGOs that provide vital services for children. So we hope that this discussion and dialogue around the policy will also broaden out in terms of the existing challenges that we are experiencing, and also find ways possibly to address that not only in the short term but also in the long term. Thank you.
Much Mrs. Lalu and Mr. Solomons. Honourable members, there you have it. Is there any questions? Okay, while members are formulating their questions, just in terms of what you're saying in your presentation, around the hampering of new growth, I would like to know from you, in terms of the organization that you represent, what is the mood out there in terms of the private sector and also foundations and international foundations were in terms of partnering with the organizations that you represent. And so that you are not solely dependent on government funding. I think we've heard from the NGO sector saying that after 1994, foreign governments and foreign aid agencies were more inclined to fund government programs than NGOs like they did in the past. And I know that historically your NGO sector in the Western Cape and Gauteng were very strong. And where I come from in the Northern Cape, EPOs are scarce as a population. So in some areas you won't find any NGOs besides the clashes there that's run by a committee. So I would like to know what is from your experience and your interaction with the organization that you represent, what are they saying in terms of the attempts that they've made and the feeling that you're getting, the responses that you're getting from these organizations. That's number one. Number two, capacity building. What are you saying that there could be an improvement in terms of building capacities of the NGOs? Could you just elaborate more on that in terms of government's responsibility in building capacity in the NPO sector? And thirdly, in terms of NPOs aligning their priorities to that of government. So I didn't hear that. Maybe I missed it. Because to me, it's clear if you as an NPO are not delivering a service where government doesn't see it as a priority, you won't be prioritized in terms of funding. But I want you to answer that besides a plain yes or no. Also look at, is there something the government is missing in terms of that prioritization? What is your take on that? I'm very interested. I've noted you, Honourable Member. I'll come to you after I finish my questions. The other issue I want to raise, and this, can the department please respond to the critique on the incompletion of the policy, the fact that in your glossary you have definitions that are not reflected. If you have a sloppy document, you have to respond or defend it. So could you please just comment on that? Let me stop there so that I can give the other members response. But just before, if you have any research that you've conducted in terms of funding and issues raised around funding, whether it's inadequate, whether it's adequate, the outcomes. Because what I think my members should note is the references they make to provincial allocations and budgets and the spending patterns of provincial governments. Just to take note of that. Thank you. Honourable Member Masilo, and then Honourable Member Kopane. Is there any other members that would like to make a comment? Honourable Member Bula.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Let me also thank the presenters this morning. Chair, you've already touched upon the decrease of funding. I just want to check with the presenters that are they also doing their job in other provinces or the concentrate in one or two provinces, and if the decrease or decline of funding, what percentage, because or whether their job allocation is expanded from the previous years, so that we check whether the department is decreasing or increasing their funding. And the last one, Chair, just to get more clarity on the interstate judgment, because some of us were not clear what was happening in interstate. Please pardon me for the ignorance of that. Maybe the day of presentation I missed that day, but if you can be updated what's happening about the judgment. Thank you very much.
Member Kopana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation from Children's Institute. My questions are as follows, Chair. My first question is based on the incompleteness of the policy, as you mentioned already. According to the present to Children's Institute, they've reported that the National Welfare Forum website indicated that the new policy was approved by MINMEC on the 31st of March 2011, and for the effective implementation from April. Now my question is, has the policy actually have taken off regarding the implementation? If not, what are the causes of delay? And secondly, they further say that it is unclear how this document can be implemented as it consists primarily of a broad principle. Now, my question, and they also say that the documentation was not made available for comment. Now, what is the feeling of the department to support maybe their position? Because they clearly say that this documentation was not available for the public comment. They really agree that really this documentation was not available for public comment. If so, what is their position? My second question is regarding the uniformity, the national uniformity. Can maybe the department illustrate how it tends to develop the uniform framework for the financing of social welfare program per province? My other question is there any monitoring or any evaluation framework for the new financial award policy in order to assess the policy success or shortcomings with the view for the future reviewing? My last question, what mechanisms the department has implemented to make sure there's a sustainability of funding the NPOs that are rendering this invaluable service where the government is unable to do so? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Member Bula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think the issue of training, capacity building, is one of the most fundamental and crucial issues which you have touched on. I think the institution needs to unpack perhaps maybe some of the innovative ideas that they might want to suggest. If you look at the issue of underspending that you have alluded to, I have no doubt that you have made some comparisons or a prior evaluation. Can you give us some case models where you suggest that perhaps maybe You know, I'm finding it a bit difficult to interpret. On one hand, that in a particular province we might have challenges that you have identified ABC. But there perhaps might be also a contradiction that in another province there is underspending, and yet we're trying to balance this. Chairperson, I'd like to know, from your interaction and evaluation, what is the level of maladministration on the ground amongst the NGOs? You know, we speak about a consultative process. Sometimes when you are on your oversight visit, particularly in the rural areas, you'll find that there is this notion that there's a lack of consultation within the NPOs, that the founding member might take the power on himself to remove members and bring in new members. This has an impact on the smooth running of the NGO. What is your lessons learned from that? And the other one I want to know about, Chair, is the issue about NGOs that perhaps might go and do withdrawals whilst they're not keeping in line with government's training around the financial aspects. What is your understanding on the ground with those kind of challenges?
I'm just going to ask Mrs. Lalu and Mr. Solomons just to note all the questions, because we're not finished yet with the questions from the members. Honourable Member Lamula, can I just get him, before Honourable Member Lamula responds, are there any other members of Parliament that would like to respond? Honourable Member Dume, that's Honourable Member Kuba, also noted, not the other two members are fine. Honourable Member Makakula, you fine?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share the sentiments of the NPOs, and I have been questioning many of the complaints that you people are raising this morning with the minister already many times. I also had many complaints on NPOs not receiving funding, even orphanages that had to go without funding. Some of the questions I'm still waiting for answers, and this is a problem. This is a huge problem, because in the department, social development, they know monitoring and evaluating is a problem. My question then is, what do you expect from government concerning remuneration of staff? And I know that was a concern of NPOs for very, very long. What do you expect? If you can come up with your expectations. And I know that is to keep your staff, not to keep on training staff, to have qualified staff, to render quality services, which the child refers to. And then my second question is, what happens to NPOs when they stop rendering services? What happened to those children? Where do these children go? Who renders services to these children, especially in the rural areas? Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Honourable Member Lamula, Honourable Member Dume,
thank you very much. No, I'm covered by the question for Honourable Lamola, but I'm just raising a concern to the Children's Institute, whereby the representation of the NPOs can be at this level, and then when we go down there, you'll discover that an NPO from an area about 500 kilometers to this place is said to be rendering services to this community. And there's no proper training to the small NPOs. I like what you said here, that the NPOs who are well established can mentor the small NPOs, but How relevant is that, or how possible is that? And again, the NPOs do make applications to even private funders, but when the NPOs are discussing with the government, it's just as if they don't get anything from outside. I think transparency will be very much important, because in the organizations listed here, there are those who can easily get funding from other donors. Then I believe here the government's intervention and obligation is to see the smooth running of the NPOs by assisting with those funds and grants. But now we have to meet halfway with you guys to say, whenever you are addressing the problems of the NPOs, they must just be very clean, straight, and clear, even to us. Because I can just quote one an NPO which was receiving about 4 grants: Department of Health, of Social Development, Agriculture, what's this? Lotto. Every quarter, 430,000, 220,000, same one NPO in Free State. So those are the things that we want.
I just want clarity. Is that for one program? Because NPOs can have different programs.
No, it's just one NPO.
No, I'm saying, is it for one program of the NPO? Was it for the same thing? That's what I'm asking.
Yes, they're doing home-based care.
It was home-based care for...
They're doing a home-based care, ma'am. Uh-huh. And they're just plowing a field. But the money, the same people, the same account, is receiving that money. I will elaborate maybe the committee
You understand what I'm trying to say? Was it for, you can do home-based care, but you can do it in different areas. Was it for one program, the same business plan? That's what I'm asking.
Same business plan.
Okay.
Same business plan, ma'am. It has been submitted to different financial institutions,
funding institutions.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And then again, I would just, my last comment is the duplication of services. Whilst the Department of Health is having caregivers, the NPOs are also having caregivers in the same area. So it means someone is doing something else and someone is doing something else, but with one person, the victim is the patient there. So I would like, whenever we meet again, for you to have programs that will where the department is not doing anything, then the NPO would come in. And then where there is no NPO, then the department, so that there must be no duplication of services. Thank you.
Maybe I can just... there was one old man in Barkley West. He said he thinks he's the cleanest man in the whole of Barkley West, because he gets washed 2 times a day. And he wasn't complaining, but he was actually trying to make a point that there was duplication of services in terms of home-based care. So what some of the CBOs did, it was 2 different CBOs. It wasn't the same group of people. But they were, instead of just doing the health side, and there was the health, the home-based care workers for health, and then for social development that provides psychosocial support. They started, the home-based care workers of social development were starting to encroach on the functions of health. And that was then sorted out. But it just shows you that sometimes the lines of responsibility is very close to one another. Can we give over to Honourable Member Makuba?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Understanding the amount of work that you are doing as the Children's Institute, and I just wanted to find out the way you said, you spoke about the underspending, the allocations. Actually, my question will be directed to the department, I think, to find out if the provinces are really allocating accordingly. And maybe if we could have that information. And also agreeing that maybe it would have been better if when the policy was done, the consultation was also done, because it would have answered most of the concerns that are being raised here today. Nevertheless, we are at this level now, and I just wanted to know from the Children's Institute. I see one, when I look at all the non-profit organizations that you've listed here, I see one group that is talking about the disabled children. It's called DCAG. I just want to know how much work are you doing with the children with disabilities? Because we do have a lot of those. Thank you.
Mafolo, and then Honourable Member Kopane.
Thank you, Chair. During our opening remarks, Mr. Solomon, you said most of the NPOs that you have mentioned to us are mostly in the Western Cape. I just want to understand the level of funding in Western Cape, and the change of administration, have it made any impact in the funding of NPOs? Thank you, Chair.
Let me just is there anyone else? Oh, Honourable Member Kopane.
I just want to comment regarding NGOs being funded by different funders for the same project. I think what happened, I used to work for an NGO. When you write a business plan, because you are looking for money, you don't know who's going to give you the money, you are not sure. So you find NGOs taking the same business plan, giving to different donors, people that they think that they're going to give them money. Sometimes you become lucky, you've got money from different funders. So maybe what needs to happen, we need to come up with how the NGOs have to be open up to the department and say, guys, I've got money from Lotto, I've got money from this. So the problem is about trust, relationship and openness between the department and the NGOs. And the problem, again, it comes from the department not having the capacity to do monitoring and evaluation also after they've given any organization any money. And again, the problem, it goes back to government not having a coordinated approach when funding different NGOs, because they fund also different organization, the same project, but money coming from different government departments. That is a problem. My question to the department is regarding, is there any training initiatives for the officials of the department to introduce this new policy, and how effective this has been? That is my question to the department. Then the other thing, how much funds the department has allocated to implement this policy? Thank you, Shane.
If I was an APO, I only report to government on the money that I receive from them and not tell them what I have in my kitty. Because I would say that would be unstrategic unless the policy requires it. But your business is your business. That would be my assumption. But report to government on the services that they are rendering on behalf of government, so that government can ensure that in terms of their quality assurance process, they get value for money. But I would also want to touch on another issue is the tranche payments that your NPLs receive from government. Do you get complaints in terms of the infrequency of payments, delays, the reporting times and so on? And how does that impact on the agreement, the service level agreement that you have? And do they, in most cases, have service level agreements with government? And how are those performance agreements, those service level agreements, being managed? and then I come to quality assurance. The NPLs that you represent, are government, when they deliver service on behalf of government, are the quality assurances being done? What I would then like to do, and I want to be unfair on the Department of Social Development, because they don't represent provinces as are sitting here, but just to comment on the broad policy issues after our presenters have responded. Okay, that concludes all the questions. Mr. Bula?
No, fine.
You're fine? Mr. Magakula? Everyone's fine. Over to you, Mr. Solomons and Mrs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to NPOs and the mood and funding and the nature of that funding, we need to note and understand that NPOs make up a diverse group of non-governmental organizations. Some of them, as I alluded in the beginning, provide different kinds of services, and some of them provide a combination of services. Some of them are larger NPOs, and some of them are smaller NPOs. And they then rely on the public and government and institutions and foundations, and also by their own, through their own fundraising efforts, whether it is big events or smaller events, or even from the general public when they do collections on the streets or whatever, to raise money, to bring money in. What we have experienced in the number of years now, that there's been a depletion of funding that we are able, that we're getting from your private sector, that is your corporates and stuff like that, for a whole range of reasons. And for your foundations, and also foundations that rely on equity shares from companies and stuff like that, and also from government, and also from the private sector. This being particularly because we've experienced that these entities and these institutions have experienced various kinds of financial stress. And because of that financial stress, the amounts of resources that they're making available to the sector, to the non-profit-making sector, is also being decreased. Just with regard to this particular submission that's been prepared by, this, by the Children's Institute, we've sent out to different organizations to get their comment on it and also send out a policy. I've also tried to get a sense of, from them in terms of what are the kind of challenges that they're experiencing. All of them report that they're experiencing a decrease in the annual income, whether that income has been from government, from your corporate sector, from the private sector, or through their own efforts of raising fundraising, whether they're collecting on the streets, whether they're organizing events in the community, or whatever it might be. They've also reported a decrease in their ability to raise funds. What they've also reported is that they also find themselves that they had to decrease some of the services, that they are unable to expand their services. They report that there's that they've experienced an increase in the need, there's an increased demand for services, but they are unable to expand their services. For example, from Molison Glorious, I'm talking from my own organization side, particularly in the last 2-3 years, we have been unable to expand our services. We have found that there's an increase in the demand for our services, but we are unable to expand those services. And we provide a variety of services. We provide services for prevention services, where we do a lot of awareness raising and education, for example, of children, young people, particularly older children, parents, adults in the communities, community organizations. We do a lot of capacity building work also. That's trying to build the capacity of older children and of people that work with children, that would be your educators, your healthcare workers, your police and so on. although we find that there's an increased demand for our services because of the new child legal framework, we are unable to provide those services because we are not able to raise the money to provide those services. We have also experienced that we have signed a 3-year agreement with Social Development to provide services, particularly in the areas of Beaufort West, Atlantis, and Delft, and the surrounding areas. The money that we receive from social services is not enough for the service that social services want us to provide. And I think that's a challenge for us. So we have to also find resources elsewhere. For example, yesterday I submitted an annual report on the funds to the Department of Social Development, Western Cape, on how we spent the money last year. And we basically overspent. Right? It was difficult for us to stay within the project and provide the services to children, and we overspent on that. So basically it means that we should cover the extra costs from other resources. And this is what a lot of NGOs are experiencing at this point in time. With regard to the issue of how NGOs responding to the crisis, and I think a lot of them are also dealing with the whole issue of, do they cut down on the services, do they find new creative ways of gaining funds and stuff like that. And a lot of NGOs at the moment are trying to approaching foundations, approaching private business, and even government for what they refer to as emergency funding, because they're sitting with an emergency situation. Where many of them, just yesterday I spoke to an NGO director, and were saying that they will have to close their facility, and they're providing a service to children within the community where they do prevention work, early intervention work, and some statutory service. Where they have to very soon, if they don't get money in the next month or two, they will have to consider closing their facility. And that is how crucial the situation is at the moment. Now, the government do contact some of those organizations that are listed in front there. Some of them do get contracted by government to provide services. And some of those services include posts like social work posts. And that the government do not provide us with enough money to cover all the expense of that particular post. So basically it means that we will have to find money elsewhere to cover that post. So what we have experienced is that social workers within the NGO sector, because of the economic situation, and they also have to survive and see to their families, all that kind of stuff, NPOs do not become a viable career path anymore. Right? So they move into government because they are able to get a competitive salary, they're able to get some of the perks and privileges at that level. So we are beginning to lose skilled people within the NPO sector. Again, from Molo Songolo's side, the Department of Social Development gave us money to employ a social worker in Atlantis. We are still struggling to employ that person because we are unable to offer the kind of package that the people want to have. So that's the level of how we are being affected by the funding model that is being implemented at the moment. Then with regard to compliance and issues of accountability and transparency, NPOs are governed by the Companies Act. And if you want to engage with government services, you have to be a registered organization. So, and there's organizations that list us in front, and many of the organizations we've led, that the department is stating that there's 100,000 organizations registered. That's quite a large volume of organizations. So what we have is that NPOs, they have to comply with certain kind of things, right? They have to have governance processes in place, policies in place, and they also have to, on an annual basis, regularly make sure that their governance structures are functioning and working, operating. They have to audit their books and all those kind of stuff. So we do audit our books. And also what we find is that not only government require us to comply according to government systems and policy frameworks, but private companies also expect us to comply according to their needs, and the foundations and the international organizations, UN organizations, EU organizations, and other international funds also expect us to comply. So we not only have to comply in terms of the Companies Act, but we also are forced to comply to government's needs, the foundation's needs, and stuff like that. So, for example, with Molosongulol, my own organization that I'm working involved in, for this year's audit, we had to do a general audit for all our general audit, right? We then had to do a funding-specific audit for one for DSD and for other companies also, where we get from whom we get money for movie. We have to account for. So those are the kind of things that also governs us. Now, yes, like we have all administration and corruption, a whole range of problems in government, we also have this in civil society. But however, civil society is also trying very hard to get its own act together. And there are many organizations within civil society that provide support services to NPOs so that they can comply, so that they can get their own house in order, so that they can put in the kind of mechanisms within the organization so they can meet the requirements and even go beyond those things. So there's a whole lot of levels at where the NPOs have to comply with, right? And then of course also nowadays with regard to monies that you receive from, whether it's from government or whether it's from private companies, you also have to build in monitoring and evaluation mechanisms so that you can evaluate and monitor that particular service that you've been contracted to do, right? So NPOs are also engaging in monitoring their own services. However, the amounts of funds that we often are able to get in compromises our ability to monitor effectively. And that's a big challenge that we are experiencing with regard to that. At another level, I think it's very important that we need to note is that some of the NPOs that's mentioned in France, some of them are operating within the Western Cape province, but also they operate on a national level as well. And also they engage and interact with NPOs on a national level as well. So the experience that we are sharing with you is not only a Western Cape specific experience, right? There's also a national experience of the NPO sector. And as I mentioned, that sector is also quite diverse. Yeah, if you want to continue with some of these specifics around the general concerns that was raised, I'm going to hand over to my colleague to continue with some of the general concerns that was raised in relation to the policy. And then also with regard to the level of funding within the Western Cape. I don't know if I want to speak to that from your RAPCAN experience. Okay. And then I can take over from there again.
Over to Mrs. Lalu. Mr. Solomons, are you still going to respond to some of the questions afterwards? Because what I was thinking... Okay. That after I've given the department the time to respond, you can just do back in a few sentences some concluding remarks and then I'll close.
I know that there was a question on has research been conducted on funding. I do know that Debbie Butlander has done quite extensive research on the various provincial budgets and analyzing the expenditure in line with those budgets and looking at whether the provincial department's budgeting process talks to the Children's Act and whether it has been, you know, in any way transformed. And I can certainly give the members access to that research if you're interested to have a closer look at some of that research as well. The Free State judgment is maybe something else that I can also email you some documents or shorter kind of documents relating to the judgment. But the Free State judgment basically came about when a group of organizations in the Free State that was extremely dissatisfied with how DSD funded them, and these organizations were providing crucial services to children, basically fulfilling the mandate of the department in delivering those services. And they took the department, the provincial department of the Free State, to the High Court. And they were able to win that case and get a favorable judgment where the judge in that court found in their favor and agreed with them that the way that DSD was funding them was completely inappropriate and not fulfilling their mandate. The state, the court then mandated the Department of Social Development to present the court with a policy or some kind of framework on how it intends to correct the situation. And that document that was submitted to the court rejected and found that it was inadequate in responding to the questions of the court. So that is where the case is at the moment. And like I mentioned in my presentation to you, we have received word that DSD is intending to appeal that ruling, and we of course would have thought that it would be far more appropriate rather to engage and produce a more sound document that would satisfy the court rather than wasting extensive resources in legal costs to actually contest what I think a lot of us agree is actually not just a problem of the Free State but a national problem when it comes to funding of crucial services across the country. I see that there are some questions specifically directed to DSD. The question around the sustainability of the NPOs, I think Patrick has covered. The question around the capacity building of NPOs and looking at innovative ideas, I think Patrick has covered as well. And I really think that NPOs in this time of financial crisis have shown incredible tenacity to try and embrace the storm. And again, keeping in mind that NPOs deliver a range of services, some of them we are fulfilling DSD's mandate, and some of them are additional services. And you'll see that in our presentation, we are asking that those services that are mandated according to various legislations and in our constitution where it says must, the state must, and where the state has asked NPOs to deliver on those services, we are asking that to be prioritized in terms of funding. And then we are also saying, please don't subsidize us where we then have to scramble for additional funds to deliver a good quality service, or we have to deliver a poorer level of service or underpay our staff when it comes to those prioritized services. So I think NPOs will always be fundraising for additional resources to do some of the other work that might not be priorities or might not fulfill the mandates of the Department of Social Development. But we do believe where we are actually fulfilling the DSD's mandates and we are delivering those crucial services, that the Department of Social Development should be paying fully for those. I think, I'm not sure if you're satisfied with how Patrick dealt with the issue of the difficulties that some NGOs do face around maladministration and transparencies, and I think we agree that they always need to be work on improving that, but we should tell you that NPOs, and I want to confirm that my organization, RAPCAN, we are held to a strict list of criteria that we need to fulfill before we get our grants, and at the end at continuous reporting to our donors, whether they are government donors or other international donors. And obviously we support the notion of transparency, and we would not support where you get different funding to do the same thing. But our organization's experience has been that where we submit a funding proposal, we almost never get 100% of what we're asking for the work, be it from state or from international donors. We maybe get 50%, we get 75%, or so we are often forced to ask for a top-up funding from other sources so that we can have 100% budget to deliver a particular project. So that could explain why you would see one organization getting little bits of money from different sources to do one piece of work, and I would not support it where they are doing duplicating work and receiving funding to do the same job from different sources. But I do know that often you have to top up because you're not getting the full amount of money to do a particular work. There was a question about what happens to NPOs when organizations stop rendering services. I'm not sure about whether my colleague can comment on that, but where we have seen organizations shut down, services just stop. And where other organizations exist in those geographical areas, they often have to try and absorb the gap that's left. But often people are just left without a service when the doors of organizations are forced to shut down.
Okay, maybe just in conclusion, I think it's very important to note that from the civil society sector, the NPO sector, we acknowledge and accept that it's very crucial for us to engage with government, to cooperate and to enter into a partnership with government. We know this, we recognize this, and therefore we do engage with government. We engage with government on many different kinds of levels, both with social development and other departments. We engage with government at national level, government provincial level, government at local level, and we do this on a daily basis, both in terms of our advocacy and lobbying work, both in terms of policy development level, and also at the whole phase of delivering services. So we're doing that at many different kinds of levels. So that partnership is crucial, both in terms of delivering our mandate in terms of set out in the Constitution. So we are there to support government. We are there to work with government. We are there to enter into partnership with government. I think it's quite unfair to expect that NPOs should deliver the same kind of services and pay them for less. I think that is something that we really need to unpack, and I hope that this committee will engage with that in terms of the new policy, right? Because NPOs do provide vital services in collaboration with government or in collaboration with private sector or organization or business, and that must be recognized for the value that it is. Then, of course, also it's very important that we need to prioritize services for children. And I think that's very, very crucial. We have a constitutional obligation to prioritize services for children. And we need to see more and more of that coming through in terms of our policies. And we also need to, particularly when we prioritize these services for children, we must also ensure that we prioritize, increase the financial resource base for those services. And we're not seeing that coming through. And I think that's in itself is a challenge not only for government but also for private sector and for the NPO sector. How do we increase our resource base? How do we increase the resources that we will need, also the money resources that we will need? And then, of course, also the most important thing is we have noted, because of the economic stresses that we've experienced in the last couple of years, that there's an increased demand for services. And more communities are demanding particular kinds of services, basic services. And we need to see how best we can support government so that government can deliver on its mandate to ensure that those services and those needs are met, and particularly the needs of children are met. So we're calling on this committee to seriously consider our challenges that we're experiencing, and seriously to ensure that the new policy will address some of those challenges that we experience, not challenges that we just experience now, particularly with this particular crisis that we experience in funding, but as a challenge that's been coming a long way in relation to the funding policy that the government has had up till now. And therefore, we hope that the new funding policy will be reviewed, and that it will address some of these challenges. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Solomon and Mrs. Lano. We'll give over to the department. Mr. Dangor.
Thank you,
Chair.
What I'll do is just talk to some of the broader issues that have emerged, and then Maria and the team will talk to us. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Solomon.
Well, there's the specifics. I think just briefly to start off, I think the submission made by the Children's Institute is helpful to us in looking at how to move forward. So I think the notion of consultation being closed is one that we would reopen. And I think that the team would need to respond to that. And I'll talk about, I mean, a lot of the questions spoke about funding of NGOs. So I think even the name itself about awards, I mean, I think very few people spoke about financial awards. I think that even the name is changed, it should become something that is almost logical for us to consider. But I just want to talk also about the principle about what underpins our discussions in actually getting to some a document like this, is that we faced with the situation where when we looked at who is accessing funds at national and provincial level, and we need to make the distinction between that, a lot of our money, up to 70%, and Maria could give me the details, of money goes to the NGO sector, particularly from welfare services. We find that a lot of it goes to organizations that are doing really good work. But in many areas, you know, when the minister, for example, goes to the poorest communities, we find that there's state failure and there's market failure, but there's also NPO failure in a sense. That's the space that NPOs, when the state and market failure, NPOs normally enter that terrain. You find that in the poorest ward that the minister goes to, there's very few organizations operating there. Or you have organizations that are very under-resourced. They're getting money not from the state. They're getting money from money they collect themselves to do the work. So I think this is something that we needed to address as well. So we needed to find how do we actually make sure that this small pot of money that we have goes to organizations, and we needed to be proactive around that. So a lot of the statutory organizations, where there's almost an automatic transfer of funds that used to take place. You know, you have to have your organizations put out, this is our plan. The Department of Welfare Services component would then take those plans, put them into their business plans, and transfers would take place on an annual basis. And I think what we needed to do was to think about how do we change that so that we can begin to fund priorities for government in line with our constitutional responsibilities. And I think this is where the document is helpful to giving us guidance on how to do that prioritization. What we're challenging our own department to do is, to what extent are we actually providing quality services for children? So early childhood development is something that we put as a priority. So to what we're asking questions, will this policy allow us to give more resources to organizations active in early childhood development? One of the key priorities that have emerged both for government is gender-based violence, and that obviously has a link with children. We found there's almost no resources coming from the state or from donors for gender-based violence. So we're looking at this kind of policy giving us the space to fund organizations active in gender-based violence work. I think what is very useful from the submission is to tell us to look at the constitution issues around protection from abuse and neglect, because that could help us frame in some of these issues, how do we begin to prioritize it. I think the issue about needing to be flexible and capacity building in partnership is going to be important for the sector to take forward as well, because I think in terms of partnership, it is a two-way street. How do we make sure that we can replicate ourselves in areas where there are no organizations able to do the kind of work that you do? So if you think that the problems that you have in Western Cape and Gauteng, and even places like Free State, is significant, think about those communities, actually provinces where there are no resources. You still find that a lot of those organizations complain that they haven't seen, you know, they're not even talking about the normalization of bilateral aid, where money was diverted from donors to government, which is normal. It's a normalization of bilateral aid. They didn't see that before 1994, and they're not seeing much of it now. So the policy needs to be able to speak to some of those issues. And I think the issue of priorities is important in terms of how we fund, because we need to set out priorities right up front, go to Treasury, and request for resources based on what these priorities are. So we're saying gender-based violence, services to children, rural development. And rural development doesn't only mean, it means the crowding in of this very same services that you do in urban areas, in those rural areas, because you have vulnerable children everywhere. And for us, it would be that kind of thing, and then we go out into the NGO sector and look at what the organizations that can do this work for us. And it's going to have to be a combination, and I think the document hasn't clearly talked to it. Request for proposals so that those with the abilities can offer their services and we can respond to that. But we're also going to have to be proactive where we look for organizations that can deliver services in areas where they are not able to do the RFP. the weakness of the request for proposal system, and we're very conscious of this, is that those with capacity always win. Because if you have an RFP process, those with capacity who have a proven track record, given the way we do funding, will always receive the price. So we also need to be flexible. And in our discussions in the department, we're very conscious of those kind of issues. So I think that's the spirit in which we are approaching this, the document. And it's not about taking resources away from NGOs. It's ensuring that we use the small resource that we have so that we can actually get NGOs to deliver those services for us the best way possible. The last point that I think I want to make is when we talk about funding for NGOs, there are some NGOs, given their budget, who will receive 100% funding from the state, and there's others who will receive a percentage of the funding from the state. And I'm sure that the organizations listed here, I do know at least, do not want to become vendors of the state. They want to become people that deliver services in partnership with the state. So the accountability issues is something that we're going to have to look at. One of the key objectives of the policy is the national harmonization issue. A problem that we found is that provinces have way too much discretion when it comes to funding NPOs in the end. What happens is we go to what is called a 10-by-10 at National Treasury. At the National Treasury, we say, these are our priorities. Money then gets disbursed based on those national priorities to provincial treasuries into the departments. And what we find is that provinces then decide to fund different organizations outside of the priority scope of government, or they decide to cut money that's earmarked for NGOs and redirect it to other areas of their business. And that is part of what the Free State case was all about. It was also the question of the discretion inherent within the national versus provincial dichotomy. Maria might talk about the fact that we've got national, what we call national NGOs, that we make transfers to directly as a national department. But by and large, when I talk about that 70%, it's made through the provinces. And I think that's where this policy is about trying to find some form of harmonization, so that if this is a national priority, it remains a national set of priorities. It doesn't change much. I think that covers the broad overview stuff, Maria.
Thank you, Chairperson. We also acknowledge the submission by the Children's Institute. Chairperson, most of the issues that they have raised, some of the issues that we've also commented that we've received from other organizations. So the department is saying that the door is not closed to submissions as far as this policy is concerned, because the policy was reviewed for specific purposes. It's not an overhaul, comprehensive overhaul of the policy on financial awards or coming up with a new policy. That still has to come. While we have reviewed the policy, there were a number of issues that Mr. Dango has also raised. The issue of uniformity, it was really dealing with administrative issues in terms of the implementation of the policy. The issues of uniformity and disparities amongst provinces or within the province, you find that one NGO will be funded at a certain level and another one at a different level. And then there were issues also of roles and responsibilities, which were not clear in the original policy. By the way, the original policy was approved and consulted in 2004, and then we started implementing it in 2005. And there were also issues of the new legislation. When that policy was approved and implemented, the pieces of legislation such as the Older Persons Act, the Children's Act, were not in force as yet. So we needed to make accommodation for statutory services. The disclosures, I think the members have referred to disclosures, was a main hurdle in terms of funding the NGOs, because we find the money will still be channeled to those NGOs that are getting funds elsewhere instead of spreading it to those NGOs, especially the rural areas that are doing a splendid work but are not well funded. And we also wanted to address the needs of of the needs in the poor areas, especially those that have been neglected in the past and they're still currently not getting any service delivery. The new policy also addresses issues of costing, that the costing of services will ensure that all the provinces, there will be uniformity. If, for example, we're funding foster care, it will be the same across, you know, the country. And so we are at the moment finalizing the costing models. We have guidelines. The information that you are not seeing in the document is in the guidelines. Maybe you might need to read the guidelines together with the model, the framework for welfare services, because we could not put everything in one policy. And with regard to consultation, as I said, we had consulted, especially with the national NGOs, the National Strategic Forum, and other provincial NGOs before the policy was finalized and reviewed and approved by MINMEC. The only thing, there was no time to go back with the policy, the draft policy, back to the NGOs, because we went to MINMEC, and MINMEC said, you know, there's an agency, as Mr. Duncan has mentioned, of service delivery in the neglected area, and we need to implement this policy immediately. If there are any further consultations that can be done, the policy is not really cast in stone. What the department also intends to do at the moment is to do research, undertake research on the provision of welfare services or social services in the country. And then that research, the findings of the research, will inform the development of the new policy, the comprehensive policy, which also can even change the name. And then from there on, we need to go into the development of the legislation. You know, and when we develop legislation, it's something that is widely consulted. There's no way in which the department can get it passed without bringing it here first. So there's still a lot of consultation that will take place. The issues around, I don't know whether that's response to all the questions. The issue of disclosures, the new policy addresses that. The costing models have dealt with it. And how much funding is available, that I cannot tell, because as we have indicated, most of the funds, most of the allocations to NGOs, it happens at the provincial level. At national, we can give you a figure, but not at provincial level. At national, I think we've got 22 million rands now that goes to the national NGOs. But at provincial level, almost over half of the budget of welfare services at the provincial level, it's almost 6 billion, I think, goes towards the NGO funding at the provincial level. And why we calling for proposals is because when we get business plans from the NGOs, they only target, you know, smaller areas, but not the entire country. So if we depart from that practice of business plans, we will be, each province must do a situational analysis and indicate which areas is desperately in need of service, and we call for proposal for delivery of services in those areas specifically. This doesn't mean that other services will come to a standstill. The services that are delivered by other NGOs will continue, but the proposal, calling for proposal, is meant for services that is, areas that has been neglected in the past. The decrease in funding, I think it is a fact that the funding is not adequate as compared to the demand for service, especially for demands for service in the remotest areas of this country where we need to be looking at as a country. We're talking about equity issues and equality. If we really mean business about that, we must make sure that every child in this country has got access to service. Every older person's person with disability has got access to service. And the Free State Court judgment, I think the second one especially, they're focusing more on funding models, on how much will the department fund the NGOs, at what percentage and so on. I don't think I'll say they totally rejected the policy. The policy was not addressing those questions. And those questions are in the costing models and the funding models that the department is currently developing. Yeah, I've dealt with consultation. Okay. Chair, I'm not sure if I've left anything, but I think generally those are my comments in terms of that. This is not a closed chapter. We will consider the submission as we move forward with working on a much more comprehensive policy.
No, thank you very much. For those inputs. We're running out of time, so let me thank the Children's Institute, Mr. Patrick Solomon from Molo Songololo, and Mrs. Vivian Lalu from MacCan for the input. It has been very informative. You can see from the level of participation from the members that we are obviously very serious about the work that we are doing. The committee will be looking at all the inputs we have received together with the policy, the national policy on financial awards to NPLs, and then we will then deliberate on it and then report to Parliament with specific recommendations. On that note, we will excuse our two presenters, and we will go over to the adoption of our outstanding minutes, as well as the oversight to Bloemfontein visit of the committee. I'll permit members a 5-minute body break. Is that fine?
Two days. Okay. only 2 days, only one night.
It's cold.
Yeah. It's cold.
It's cold.
It's cold.
It's cold.
It's cold.
Thank you.
It's two sets of minutes, the one of the 10th and the one of the 16th and the 23rd. And the
23rd.
Yeah.
Is it three sets?
Yeah, three sets. All of our members, can we start with the ones of the 16th, please? I'm sorry, of the 10th. Thank you very much for that correction. Present was, in terms of the ANC, Botha Thaba Tswete, Democratic Alliance, on Kopane Lambula, Kume, Kau, IFP, Makuba, ID Porsa, and then there's the following apologies. There's a list of officials. When we come to the agenda on page 2, is members fine with the attendance issues? Okay. Presentation on the department's last quarter financial and performance report. Adoption of the third term committee program. Adoption of outstanding minutes. To the last. Okay, in terms of page 8, we requested the following documents: list of processes, the pilot, the cluster, foster care models, reports on international agreements which the department is part of. Just take out the 8, please. Which the department is part of. Breakdown of the 8 provinces that conducted workshop focusing on application of guidelines on mainstream of gender into integrated development plans. Report containing details of service providers and the RAN adoption service, and a report reflecting the number of outstanding backlogs on appeals. We receive that?
No.
Okay, we need to receive these, But the minister said to me that she wants to talk to us about adoption. She still wants to interact with the committee again on adoption, especially inter-country adoptions and so on, that is now, inter-country that is now becoming quite popular, and agencies just bringing up, wanting to facilitate that, and it looks as if there is some monetary beneficiation or motivation behind this. So, just for us also to be on the alert side and so on. Then, can we go to page 10? In terms of the resolutions, we haven't, so that is outstanding. We are busy with this process currently. So the list of provinces is outstanding. Okay, and the appeals. And then the issue of adoption services. This is details of service providers, so that is outstanding. We will just write a letter again to the department, and we'll interact with the parliamentary, because she's not here. Parliamentary liaison officer is outstanding. Yeah. Can we get a proposal and a seconder for the adoption of the minutes, please? Honourable Member Gawa, thank you. And Honourable Member Gomez, thank you very much. Um, I just missed on this one, so can you get another one from your side? Thank you. Then, in terms of the 16th of August, is it the 16th? yeah, we have the minutes on the 16th. Present was Wota, Kenyi, Mafolo, Magagula, Masilo, Kaba, Tswete, D.A. Kupani, Labula, Congress of the People, Dume, Paul Saidi, Minority Front, Bula, and apologies from Makuba IFP. then we have a whole list of officials in attendance. The agenda was, on page 2, was the briefing by the newly appointed CEO of SASSA and the adoption of a committee report on an oversight visit to the Eastern Cape. Yes? Yes? Yeah, you're right. Yeah. There's an apology, should be an apology. Thank you very much for that.
The product of neutral density was what was mentioned. I don't know what is recorded. Your opposition.
It was. This, I know that it was read. Members said to me. The chairperson of the committee, Ms. P. Tswete, Honorable P. Tswete. The acting chair. Okay. So those were the two items of the agenda. And I'm sure you haven't adopted the Eastern Cape Committee report, right? So it stood over. Okay. Adoption, yeah, was postponed. The committee should be kept informed about the evaluated resolutions of its SEV. Yeah. Okay, the high vacancy rate. The issues of merchants and money lenders, mushroom leases, filing system. Okay, there you go. Can we get a proposal for the adoption of the minutes? Honorable Member Marshall.
I do adopt
the minutes. Honorable Member Kopanen. Thank you. Second, Honorable Member Kopanen. I wasn't here. Can we go over to the minutes of the 16th? Did we deal with the 16th? Yes, we did. Did we get down for the minutes of the 16th of August? Yeah, we did. Oh. Oh, yeah, sorry. It's this, I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm absent-minded today. I think it's a candorel affecting me, the same collapses in me. On the 23rd, in terms of the ANC, was Bota, Kenya, Mafolo, Magagula, Masilo, Kaba, Tswete, Democratic Alliance, Kopane, Lamula, Congress of the People, Honorable Mimikume, Independent Democrats, Posa, Minority Front Pula, apologies from Honorable Member Makuma. Yes? Honorable Member Kupane?
Chair, maybe it's a mistake. Mr. Magagula now has changed to be a female now. Or maybe the wife or the whoever was here on his behalf.
for the correction, please. Then, if you look at the officials in attendance with the minister, deputy minister, I think we're very blessed as a committee or fortunate always to have our minister or deputy minister or even both present in our meetings. But we're going to be going there now. Moshani Sweep Club. Because we're visiting an operating pain point in Bloom. We're going to Beta. Briefing by the department on the finalization of the national policy on financial awards and the NPO's policy guidelines.
Excuse me, sir.
It's financial awards to NPOs.
Non-profit.
Ms. Nsawa, you're making us confused here. Yeah. Two NPOs. This policy guidelines at the end, Malcolm means Germakar. Just leave that at the end. Okay? So it should read the agenda briefing by the department on the finalization of a national policy on financial awards to NPOs. Okay? Right?
Okay. I don't know, maybe it's a mistake. They talk about the apology on behalf of me, but I was there. Chairperson. Yes. Yes, I was there.
You were there?
No, I was arriving at 10 o'clock. That was the time I was.
Your name is here.
No. Look for that. Yeah, I was there.
You just arrived late, but you were at the meeting.
No, Chair, I was not arriving late. I said I'll be arriving late, but I was early.
Oh.
Yes, I said when I talked with Lindo, but I was late. I arrived there, we not started the meeting. We started when I was there.
Okay, thank you. Take it out. Or we'll just amend it to say there was an apology of the Honourable Member, but she arrived on time. Okay. It was a very long meeting on presentations. What we said was that the department should provide the committee with a list of NPOs, community-based organizations, faith-based and community-based organizations funded by the department. The committee expressed its concern over the lack of capacity of NGOs to draft business plans to apply for funding. It was suggested that capacity building should be specifically provided to the emerging NPOs. Excuse me, Honourable Member Lamula, can you just use your mic, please?
They do speak on assistance with business plans. Okay.
The committee was concerned over non-compliance of the NPOs to the NPOs Act and funding guidelines. It was agreed that the department should establish mechanisms aimed at assisting and ensuring that NPOs comply with the Act and funding guidelines. Okay. You see, this is precisely the aim of the policy, isn't it? Financial awards. Thank you. I see, I've got a bit of a problem with that. Precisely because we were, it was basically presentations by the NPL sector. Oh, and the department. Okay, now it's fine. The committee was concerned over the non-compliance. Okay. With regard to the monitoring and evaluation of NPLs funded by the department, the committee recommended that the department should put more focus on the issue and develop mechanisms to strengthen monitoring and evaluation. Okay. I think that's fine. Can we go with these resolutions? Because when we compile our report after today's meeting, we will then have to compare with what the NPL said. Can we ask the researcher to do that? And what the policy says? And the issues that, can she develop a document for us raised by the NGOs in terms of shortcomings that are not in the Act and the implications thereof? Thank you very much, members. Can we get a proposal for the minutes? Member Mafola? Yeah? Mafola?
I just want to check if the department has sent those lists of CBOs and NGOs to the secretary. So we request for follow-up. So that when you go on recess, members must have those lists. Because there are some many issues with some of our NGOs that are funded by government, especially social development. Yes.
Honourable Member Mafola,
Thank you, Chair. I think the resolutions that we are taking, it's important for us to make follow-ups on those resolutions. We must get all the resolutions that we have as the department to do and make follow-ups on them, because we will keep on making resolutions and not following them. We should see the outstanding resolutions so that we follow up on them. Thanks.
Yeah, let's ask the content advisor with the researcher to just to draw up a list of the resolutions that we've taken so far this year and the implementation thereof. Okay. We've done some follow-ups, if you remember the resolutions we've taken in the House on budgeting and reporting, and the department has come back to us and so on and so on. So it's going to be quite interesting. Can we get a proposal in the seconder for the adoption of the minutes, please?
For adoption.
An honorable member. Oversight visit. And committee secretary.
Pursuant to my SMS I've sent to the members around the planned visit to the Free State, after a directive from the House Chairperson that committees that are regarded as identified as priority committees must conduct oversight visit prior to the People's Assembly, and there was a preparatory team that was established to look at the issues that the committee would need to exercise oversight over. So I've made the arrangement in consultation with the chairperson, We will be departing on Thursday the 14th at 6 o'clock. The reason for us to depart at that time is because on Wednesday there is a plenary, and the committees tried to grant permission from the chief whip for committees that will be undertaking the visit to leave on Wednesday. So the chief whip did not approve for committees to leave early. The committees must attend the full session, which will end about after 6. So because of that, we managed to get the 6 o'clock flight, apologizing for waking you up early, members. We'll be sleeping at the Southern Sun Hotel in Bloemfontein. We will arrive at 7:30 on the 15th, which is Thursday, and we had our breakfast, we've arranged breakfast. And at 9:30, there will be an official from the department that will come to fetch us to start with our program. In the program, at 9:30 to 10 o'clock, we'll be driving to Tseponong Victim Empowerment Center, which is in Bloemfontein. And then we'll receive a briefing from the management on the objectives of the center. Regarding this VEP, I've requested them to provide us with an overview so that we can have an idea as to what type of program it is. And I've requested also the researcher to prepare the briefs for the committee, at least we have an idea. And then thereafter, we will move to Aurora Alcohol and Drug Center, which is stationed in Bloemfontein, and I've also requested a brief for this. I think by tomorrow or Thursday latest, we will have some briefs to just have a background information. From 1 o'clock to 2, we'll have lunch, and then from 2 to 3, 12 past 3, we'll drive to One Stop Child Justice Center, where we'll receive a briefing on the objectives of the center and challenges and intervention required to address such challenges that will be identified. And then we will walk about in the center, and then I think meeting the staff, I think it's the same thing as the briefing. I think we need to take it out, and then that will be the end of the program for day one. We'll go back to the hotel and do some debriefing, because we'll be required the report to be completed by Sunday night. Monday, the latest, we need to submit a report. That will be discussed during the People's Assembly. Day two, we will visit the Tusanong building. There is an ACT operational pay point on that day, so the committee will be at liberty to go and see the first-hand, action of beneficiaries receiving their grants. They will be interaction with the beneficiaries, members can interact with them. And then thereafter, we'll go to the regional office, where we'll receive a briefing from the department, from SASA, on challenges and developments they are facing. I think they will cover the IGAP and all other projects of SASA. And then we will go and visit the service office at Tusanong, the site visit at Tusanong building. And then thereafter we'll have lunch and drive back to Bloemfontein in the afternoon to various destinations. So we'll drive to the Bloemfontein airport. I think it's not right. Initially, the program that was we were under the impression that the program would end on about 3-4. So we booked later flights, but we'll look for earlier flight with Nusuk. We'll try to schedule in earlier flights. Okay. Now we'll address that. Okay. They will provide lunch for us in both days. The department and SAS. Thank you.
Okay. I think we'll agree on the effect that those that have to fly, let's look at earlier flights. I'd like Matume, I think if you look at the flight for you to South to Durban, there is a flight from Bloemfontein to Durban for on the Matume instead of going via Joburg. So let's just look at those logistical arrangements, just finalize it. And so I think the preferable time, the latest would be 4 o'clock for all members. Am I correct? So we're going to look at that. So that when we keep track of time during the day, that we just stick to 1600, okay, for the latest for all members. Now, I think what is very important is just the logistics in terms of the pick-up times for members, because since Parliament is paying for the shuttles to take members to the airport, they have to collect members in the three parks. Am I correct? Yeah, so the pick-up time should just be made available to members on time. And those members that are going to, we're going to leave you behind. If your pick-up time is 5 o'clock and you're not at your door at 5, we're leaving you. Because you're going to make everyone late. Is the flight departing at 6 o'clock? No, you can't have 5:30 from the park.
No, Chair, the 6 o'clock will collect members at 4:30.
Yeah, I think Pelican Park, it's quite a long drive. It's almost 40 minutes, am I right? Well, Laboria and Acacia takes us about a good solid 20 to 30 minutes to the airport. So the 4:30 is a good time for us to go and revive ourselves in the VIP lounge, in the Voyager lounge. Yeah, so which means that Wednesday night you have to go. Honourable Member Marcelo?
How will you work only in the
Yes, it's under social development. I don't know. I think all committees will be there. There's quite a few other committees of the National Assembly also. But, no, I think that is what's missing from this program. Is just because Aurora, it says Bloemfontein, because it's in the CBD. What we need to tell you is, and I think, Committee Secretary, when you go and retype this thing that's going to be... you know, because you need to give us files. We're not moving here without files. Aurora is in the CBD itself, right? Where is the one-stop child justice center? You said it's near Haida, or where is it?
It's
Chusanong. Okay, now we need to get to know where is the Child Justice Center, where specifically, you know, so that we know it is in, because what the instruction I gave the committee secretary was to say, if you look at the townships, let's look at the townships in Bloemfontein, because if we go to the east, we got 2 days of oversight, which means if you travel out of Bloemfontein and Omangahung, we're going to run into trouble in terms of time. We're going to spend more time on the road than doing oversight. So we concentrated on the townships in the Mangahung municipal area. Yeah. But it's just 2 days, and Friday is basically half a day because honourable members have to go home. Honourable Member Mafolo?
Are you
in a shop too? I'm teasing you, Honourable Smith, because you're so quiet. Honourable Member Kava? Yes, cheers. I just want to share with the committee secretary to say they do check with the official of Bloemfontein, because usually they have that tendency of
making us to be late, to arrive late to the oversight. When we arrive late, there is no more what you call it? More time to speak there when we're arriving later. They'll do that because I was in the two times oversight in Pompad game with the rural development. We'll see the what you call it, the official of the Pompad team, they have that tendency to make us to be on the road far until we arrive maybe 6 o'clock there. We cannot see anything there. We are tired, we cannot see anything, we cannot speak with the people because we do stay in the boardroom until we come back. Mm. Because we cannot go out and see whatever happened here. Thank you, Chair.
If you look at our oversight, the way we structured it, that's why I said to Honourable Member Msilo, she asked, I think your question and our question doesn't differ a lot. We said that our oversight is in the Nangawung municipal area. Yeah. And we're visiting sites, we're visiting centres. And if you look at our times is in business hours. So even when we go and visit, we're also going to a pay point. So the pay point will be when they're actually paying grants. So we won't be going to a dead center. And what this program, Parliament has also sent an advanced team to go and check out these facilities and so on. So we have that extra backing of the advanced team of Parliament that went out to go and check out these facilities for us. Okay? Because it's linked to the People's Assembly. Yeah.
Yes, I think
it would be good for us to check in. Maybe at that time, you know, check-in is usually around 2, is it between 11 and 2? So we can leave our luggage there. And when we come back, we'll get our rooms. Because you must remember in the morning, the rooms will be occupied. Okay? We chose that hotel because it's quite central. It's smack bang in the middle. And for Honourable Members, it's next to the biggest mall in Naula. You just walk. So if you have forgotten anything, it's just next door. You can just walk over and get it. Or if you want to go and watch a movie in the evening. And please don't get lost in Bloemfontein. Thank you very much, Honourable Members.
Thank you.